How you doing?
All right, so we are live. And today is February 21st, 2017. And we're at the Subcommittee on General Government. We're going to be open for a public hearing in a second, but first, I want to turn over to staff for some comments.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, yesterday there were a question of the Employment Relations Board related to their KPMs. Just wanted to let you know that there is a report now being posted online under yesterday's date on OLIS with a KPM report for the Employment Relations Board for you to view, and it's up. Okay.
Now, we will go formal and we'll open up a public hearing on agency overview and public testimony on Senate Bill 5511, Construction Contractors Board, James Dennell, and also Patrick Heap. Gotta hit that gavel
yes.
there.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 5511 is the budget bill for the Construction Contractors Board. This agency, since it's up early, is still in the process of getting their governor's recommended budget over to the legislative branch, which isn't uncommon. So we will be uploading that to OLIS as soon as that's available, and I'll send an email notice to the committee members once we do have that online. But the agency, Jim Dinno, the agency administrator, is here today to brief you on the budget.
Mr. Co-Chair, can I start off with just a brief comment?
Please, Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I would share with committee members, this was an agency in the past that this committee has really, really struggled with. Performance measures were not being met. Customers were not happy. Legislators were not happy. The public was not happy. No one was happy. And we ended up, the governor's office ended up moving in a different direction and bringing in a new administrator. And I have to share with you, it has been just a 180 since then. You have done an absolutely phenomenal job to where customers are happy, legislators are happy, the public is happy. And so I want you to know if in the presentation at any point you start seeing historical information that's not the most flattering, it wasn't. But it has definitely been turned around in the last biennium or so. So there you go, Mr. Director. I've prepped you to a committee that's new to your work.
Yeah, just when you thought for a minute there I was going to go all south on you, huh? Go ahead, please.
Well, thank you for the kind words, Co-Chair Smith, Co-Chair Manning, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jim Dennell, the administrator of the CCB. And I'm here to talk to you a little bit about our agency, and we have some new members on the committee, so I'll give you some background for those of you that may not be as familiar with what we do. I'll click through our slides here. Hopefully you can see them all right. The CCB was established as the Builders Board in 1971 to regulate residential home builders. In 1990, the name was changed to the Construction Contractors Board, and regulatory authority was expanded to include commercial contractors. It's a 9-member board consisting of commercial and residential contractors, public members, and a local elected official. What do we do? The CCB develops licensing standards for contractors. We enforce the construction contracting laws. We educate the public about contractor licensing requirements. And we mediate disputes between homeowners and licensed contractors. This is a completely other funded agency, most of that coming from licensing fees. And just to give you a little perspective here, Representative Smith referred to the past a little bit. This shows kind of gives you a picture of what has occurred with our budgets, the numbers of licensees and full-time employees over the last decade or so. You can see there, and I'll say a little bit more about this in a minute, that the construction industry was hit pretty hard in the recession. We license commercial and residential contractors, as I stated. But since 1990, we've had a number of other categories of licenses added to our plate. The newest coming just this year, restoration contractors and road flagging companies. So we have an expanding mission that's happened over the last couple decades. A picture's worth a thousand words, and this picture shows you what happened to the numbers of licensed contractors during the recession. The numbers fell very precipitously until finally bottoming out in late 2013. Since that time, we've had a very gradual but steady increase in contractors, and we're encouraged to see that. So just delving in a little deeper into the things that we do, enforcement is a big part of what we do. And what we encounter out there in the field are unlicensed contractors, workers paid under the table to avoid taxation and unemployment benefits, illegal advertising, itinerant scammers. The chicken there dressed up as a contractor is part of our ad campaign. Anyone can pretend to be a contractor. The other part of that message is make sure that you check your contractor's license and make sure it's valid. We've actually had a terrific response to this ad campaign. We take this around with us wherever we go to the different outreach events that we participate in. We've actually had a couple of states call us and ask us if they could use this motif for their own enforcement programs.
Mr. Downer, back to the other slide that you just said, the previous slide, are you finding that there is an increase in unlicensed contractors out there, people that are advertising illegally? And so are you working with BOLI, or is BOLI a part of this process for collections?
I'll have more to say about this a little further on in the presentation, but yes, we do work with other agencies. We're part of what's known as the Interagency Compliance Network, which is a group of agencies that share enforcement information. So that includes BOLI, it includes Workers' Compensation, Department of Revenue, Employment Department, and a couple of licensing boards like us. And we share enforcement information. If we run across somebody who's out of compliance with the law, we'll pass that on to those other agencies, and so then they can take enforcement action as well.
Okay, so I'll ask one other question. Unless anyone have any questions that they that's really burning or anything like that, how many slides do you have in your presentation?
Let's see. I'm up to 8. I got about 10, 12 more.
Okay. So what? I think that you're probably going to answer a lot of questions, unless the co-chair or one of the other members have anything. Then I would hold off on questions. I won't come back to you. But if the committee members have questions and stuff, then are you comfortable? You okay with that?
Mr. Chair, yes, I am. Thank you. So another big part of what we do is education and outreach. We spend a lot of time trying to advise the public about the requirements for contractor licensure and to see that they make sure that they check that the contractor has a valid license. You see there are some pictures of some of the resources that we've created to help get that message out. We also engage in education of contractors. So before you can get a license, you have to go through a class and pass an exam, and then contractors have continuing education requirements in order to maintain their license. So you see a picture there of a classroom where one of our live classes that we give all around the state. And here too, Mr. Chair, to your question, we collaborate with other state agencies on this classroom content as well, including building codes and workers' comp and OSHA and others.
I would share with you, Mr. Co-Chair, these folks do a great job of also reaching out and working with our small business development centers, who are kind of that front line to working with the business community. And I don't know if you're going to talk about that in the future, but that's greatly appreciated. I also like the building. That's in Hermiston. And
so, yes.
I like that.
Correct.
Anyway, thank you, Mr. Kutcher.
One of our challenges, too, is the information technology infrastructure that the agency is dealing with. Like many state agencies, our IT infrastructure is old, it's dated, and so it limits our ability to be efficient, to provide a better experience for the customer. And that's something that we're working on, and as I'll say a little bit more about in a few minutes, it's going to be a big focus for us in this coming biennium. Just some numbers to give you some perspective on the work that CCB does. As you can see, we get a lot of phone calls. We renew and issue process lots of licenses, renewals. We give pre-license exams to the tune of 5,000 or so a year. Our education outreach staff is very active. We participate in 60-odd outreach events in a year. And you can see on the enforcement side there, we check 8,000 job sites. We issue lots of enforcement actions and investigate customer complaints. So we're pretty busy most of the time. So our strategy for this coming biennium all revolves around public protection. We are really trying to stay focused on doing the best job that we can at our core mission of protecting the public. And that begins with enforcement. And I'm just calling your attention there to a couple of our KPMs. KPM number 4 relates to contractors who fail to pay damages, and we have seen a great improvement in this KPM. We have it, I hesitate to say we have it down to zero, but it's getting close. It's 0.06%, and that's a testament to the effectiveness of our enforcement staff and our mediation staff. And KPM 5 relates to the length of time it takes to close an enforcement action. And here again, this has come all the way down precipitously. We, Chair Smith alluded to, we had some challenges here in the past, and if you're looking at the chart at some point in 2014, this spiked way up to 181 days or so, and that's when our new management team came in, and we found many, many old enforcement cases that had never been resolved, and so we worked really hard at getting those resolved, and then the very next year, that average days to close an enforcement action went down to 55, and this year it's down to 10. So we've had some really good progress in the area of enforcement. Also, successful dispute resolution services, this also relates to KPM 4. And then KPM 6, this is gonna be a big focus for us in 2017. KPM 6 is the average number of days it takes to resolve a dispute between a homeowner and a contractor. Our target is 155 days. We're just right at about that right now. But this is a program that we're beginning to dive into this year to look at the whole process of how the information flows, our communications. And we think that there's a real opportunity here to bring the average number of days way down. Hopefully, we will even be recommending reducing the target in the future. So this is something that we see a real opportunity to improve on. Educating the public, this is KPM number 2. We ramped up our public outreach tremendously over the last 2.5 years, and we hit our target for 51% of the public knowing the we do an annual customer survey of the public, and we hit this target for the first time in our history, I believe, this past year. So that this is another area where we're really focusing on excellence. I have collaboration and transparency here. This has to do with our working together with other agencies, like I referred to earlier. We're part of the interagency compliance network. This involves a group of state agencies that work together to see that contractors and other types of businesses comply with the laws relating to employment, workers' compensation, BOLI, and other regulations. This is in addition to our collaboration with other states. We're a member of the National Association of State Contractor Licensing Agencies. That's a mouthful. NASCLA is the acronym for that. And we've begun to collaborate with other states, particularly in the West. We see these, I call them itinerant scammers, paving contractors and folks who go from state to state and try to scam people into replacing driveways and things like that. Just this past year, we had the first meeting of a group of Western states' enforcement staffs to begin to share information. And this organization, this national organization, NASCLA, has come up with a nationwide enforcement database that we're also participating in. So we're sharing information across states even. And finally, I have outstanding customer service. This is just something that we aspire to in every facet of our business. And I'm happy to say that we get lots of high marks for customer service. Just a couple weeks ago, I had a contractor call just to tell me how much he appreciated the service that we provide and how wonderful our people are. Typically, you know, somebody doesn't go out of their way to call you up just to tell you that. It's usually something quite different. So I always have to brag on our staff wherever I go because we really have terrific people that do a great job. So part of our strategy, too, is to not reinvent the wheel. Our agency in the past has done a lot of sort of homegrown, home-maintained licensing exams. And we, just this past year, we adopted a national exam for home inspectors. This saves the agency a whole lot of resources in, like I said, writing and then maintaining exams, keeping them current. And it also gets you a better quality of exam and therefore a better quality of contractor coming through the door. So we have a national exam for home inspectors. We're looking at something similar for locksmiths. We also are accepting now the commercial exam that was developed by NASCLA. This is especially helpful for contractors who work in multiple states. It streamlines the licensing process for them. And then strategic partners in education. Chair Smith referred to the Small Business Development Centers. These folks have been a really terrific partner for us in the whole realm of educating contractors. They helped us translate our contractor manual into Spanish. They helped review it for us and make sure that it was a quality product. We have participated with them in Latino outreach strategizing. They're just a really terrific partner for us, and so we're really trying to help each other in this whole area of educating contractors.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would add that, you know, your SBDCs and your construction contractors folks, it's the right collaboration, because quite often someone comes in wanting to start a small business. They want to figure out how to become a contractor, and they don't know those first steps. And so your SBDCs are able to work with them to get all the tools in place, just to even how to start a small business, toss them over. Then they're able to go through their training programs. Then quite often they get tossed back to sharpen up even further as they're going into business. And so it's a really good resource the business owners have between the two. So it works really well. Thank you for doing that.
Well, let me do a follow-up in there, too. Based off of that information, how does that look with the veterans community? Service members that's coming back that already have acquired these particular skills, and are they able to integrate easily, or are there difficulties, or are there other programs?
Well, the SBDCs also are very helpful to veterans, so they're able to help them through the process, and we have they have programs for them as well. I appreciate Chair Smith mentioning that about small businesses, because something like 85% of the contractors in Oregon are small businessmen. So it is a really great partnership for small businesses in our industry. So another part of our strategy is to make it easier to do business with the CCB. And again, I referred to our IT infrastructure being dated. This is going to be a big focus for us this coming biennium, and in our budget you see our request for a limited duration IT position to help us through IT upgrades and IT security issues. Another thing that we have worked on extensively this past biennium and are going to just continue this into the future is working with the Building Codes Division. Building codes and CCB serve basically the same licensee base, same customers. So we are trying to partner together on a one-stop shopping place to go on the web to deal with all of your construction licensing issues. Also, something we've really just completed work on is improvement in the website license search feature. This is a really critical piece of what we do for the public. You can go to the website and you can plug in a license number or a name and find out the status of the license. In the past, it's been pretty cumbersome and hard to understand, and so we've improved that quite a bit. I have expand mobile device capabilities. This remains aspirational for us, but again, as we improve our systems and upgrade our systems over the next biennium, hopefully we'll get to the place where you can actually have an app on your phone to check licenses or report unlicensed activity. The last time I was here, we were talking about looking at a new headquarters for the agency. We have had a lot of complaints about the office being hard to find, hard to reach, hard to park. A lot of people ended up with parking tickets when they came to visit us. So in the summer of 2015, we moved into this beautiful facility. It used to house Regents Blue Cross for years. It's now known as the Beardsley Building. We moved in there with the Public Utility Commission and a division of DHS. In 2015, it's a great facility. Parking is free. We have our own public meeting space now, and we saved on the rent. So our strategy going forward, live within our means. We want to, as we move forward, keep our efficiency high and our costs low. The contracting industry, as we mentioned, was hit particularly hard in the recession, and so as it gets back on its feet and more contractors get licensed and come into the business, we want to keep our fees low. So we're not proposing any fee increases at all for 2017-19. In fact, we are reducing fees related to continuing education because we're operating efficiently enough now that we don't need to assess those additional fees. We want to continue to collaborate with other agencies and particularly to coordinate our resources with the Building Codes Division. And these are just our values that I preach day in and day out, and I believe that our people live by. We're trying to be creative, to be entrepreneurial, to position ourselves for the future, and most of all, to be a model of public service. So what's coming in 1719? What we do know is that we're going to spend a lot of time and energy and resources on investments in technology. It's time for this agency to get up to date and stay up to date technologically. I have economic recession there. We certainly don't hope that that doesn't come about, but we want to be prepared for that, and so this is why we maintain our focus on efficiency. We have a substantial ending fund balance right now, which would carry us through if there was a economic downturn of some sort, and also fund our needed investments in technologies. So this is our budget request. In round numbers, it's as you can see, it's about a 5% decrease from our continuing service level, 2% over last budget, and it adds a limited duration IT project manager. All this without increasing fees, and in fact, reducing our continuing education fees. One last little opportunity for me to brag about our people. I feel so fortunate to work with these people. This is the finest group of managers that I've had the privilege of working with. And then these are all of our contacts for our different programs. The staff at CCB are just the best, and so we're really, really fortunate to have them. And with that, I'll take questions or turn it over to Patrick.
I'd like to open it up to the committee. Anyone have any questions? To me, this has been one of the better good news presentations that I've seen. It's not costing any money. It seemed like you've done an excellent job in streamlining. So I do agree with Co-Chair Smith that it looks like there's been a complete turnaround. I would be interested to kind of dig down a little bit more off-site, how veterans are coming back, starting up their business and contracting and stuff. You know, I'm doing a little research on that, so I've got some interest in that area as well. So, Representative Abe?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So I'm curious, as the 5.3% decrease from continuing service levels, you're not increasing any fees, you're adding staff, where are your savings coming from? Where are you finding efficiencies?
Well, in the last biennium, we reduced quite a number of positions, and then we've just worked on operating as efficiently as we can across all of our programs. So that's real, and we are seeing increased revenues, fortunately. So, okay.
Senator?
Thank you, Mr. Mm-hmm. Co-Chair. I've got several questions, so maybe three of them. How'd you end up with road flagging? Is that your choice or somebody?
No. Is that a good enough answer?
Yeah, it just seems like it's an ODOT function more than so.
Well, yeah, it's something that we was added to our plate. We didn't go looking for it, and it doesn't make a great deal of sense to us either. Although I must say that the definition of what contracting is very, very broad, so it includes paving companies and road builders. So maybe in that sense, it makes sense to have road flaggers as well.
So you're doing the licensing for road builders, and okay,
yes,
that makes some sense. The other question is, I know there's some high schools that are building houses. So how's that work through you? Do they use a licensed contractor to oversee their programs?
That's a little bit in the weeds for me. I'd have to get back to you on that one.
I think it's a great thing, and I just was a little bit curious.
I believe that we license them, actually, schools that do that.
Good. And then the same thing with community colleges that are doing training for house building. I assume you work in conjunction with them?
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm.
Good. The third thing is if you can email us a cost of the licenses. I don't know if there's one page overview or.
I can tell you that from memory, actually.
Okay.
The license fee is $325 for 2 years. And then there's a number of what we call light licenses. And a few of those are $100 or so.
Okay.
But the main license fee for a contractor is $325.
Thank you for your approach to this. I love your presentation and what you've done with the organization.
Thank you.
Representative Amber.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and I apologize for being late. I was testifying on a bill in another committee. If this question has already been addressed, then I'll just be happy to go back and review the tape. But Mr. Dano, thank you for being here today. You and I have talked before about this, but you know that I am quite interested in the issue of delinquent debt, money that is owed the state already by Oregonians. And I note in past years that account in your department is running roughly $5 million and is made up from as many as 2,500 different accounts. Could you give us a little background on that, where the money is owed from and what we're doing or how we can do a better job of collecting some of it?
Co-Chairs, Representative Gombert, basically all of those accounts come from either a contractor or an unlicensed person who's been assessed a civil penalty. We have an FTE on our staff who does nothing but bird dog those accounts and brings in something on the order of $75,000 a month. Once they hit a certain age, and I believe it's 90 days, then we send them over to revenue, and revenue works on them for a year or so. And then I think we get them back, and I believe they go to a private a debt collection agency at that point. So that's how we approach it. I don't know what other agencies do, but I know that we devote a whole FTE to doing nothing but that, and she actually gets really very good results.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
So one FTE collecting $75,000 a month, and we've got a $5 million pool. If we gave you another two FTE, would they get the same rate of return?
Co-Chairs, Representative Gomberg, that sounds like reasonable math.
But not reasonable real world.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Again, I shared my accolades. They're sincere. I think there's a major issue in the state of Oregon and perhaps in the United States as it relates to contractors that work with big box stores, Home Depot, Lowe's. Consumer goes into Home Depot, they go into Lowe's, they get credit from those entities or they plunk down their Visa card, and they're obligated to prepay for services, whether it's carpet insulation, new countertops, whatever it may be. And then they wait at the mercy of these contractors to show up, and then they're at the mercy of whether these contractors do good work or not. And at some point in time, it would seem to me that there ought to be a work group, perhaps led by you folks, that look into this situation. I'll share with you personally, it happened in our home in Heppner, where we went and plunked down $40,000, went through a nightmarish situation. I introduced a legislative concept. Vice President of Home Depot shows up out in Heppner, Oregon, says we're going to give it to you all for free. I said, you can't do that. I'll end up in jail. And so now for 8 years, I've lived with crummy craftsmanship from crummy contractors that I had to prepay for. Let the issue kind of go a little while. Next thing you know, this last summer, exact same situation happened to another constituent, but with Lowe's, in which these people prepay, they're obligated to prepay. They wait for the contractor comes out, does a good job or does not, but either way, Home Depot and Lowe's has your cash. You know, in other situations, if they don't show up, you don't pay. If they don't do good work, you don't pay until the job's done correctly. But with these big box stores, consumers don't have that option. And to me, it would seem like we need to further that conversation.
Chair Smith, that's worth looking at. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you, I had the opposite experience with Home Depot just recently. We redid our kitchen, and I couldn't have been happier. But the paying in advance issue is something that we should probably look at. Yes.
Yeah, and maybe you know, statistically, I just was on one end and you were on the other. But that prepayment, to me, there ought to be a way for consumers to protect themselves until the job's done correctly, and not have your cash tied up.
Mr. Chair, the thing I'm getting at is that I have had some very lively conversations with you about contractors failing to perform, not only the prepayment, but if you got bad workmanship, have they posted a bond that you could call against someplace? Or is you make your private sector folks do that? Why should a big box be treated any differently or get any advantage that, you know, Betsy's Better Hammers doesn't get?
Co-Chair Senator Johnson, these big box stores are licensed as contractors.
Lowe's, do they post a bond?
So they have to post a bond just the same as any other contractor.
Good.
And I will say that when it comes to consumer complaints with the big box stores, we've had very satisfactory results.
Have you? Okay.
They take care of people.
Maybe there's just some about you, Mr.
Yeah, yeah, maybe.
Well, yeah, I don't know about that situation.
Well, then maybe the situation's not there. Maybe that was just more of a personal experience. Okay.
I'm sorry that you had that experience.
No. That's good to know that that's not a big issue in Oregon. Thank you.
Any other questions from the committee? Mr. Dillon, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Heath.
Good afternoon, Chair Manning, members of the committee. Patrick Heath with the Chief Financial Office. I have for you today a short presentation on the governor's budget for the Construction Contractors Board. Specifically, I'm going to try to focus my presentation today on actions we took in the governor's budget and then the rationale for why we approached it. Just as a bit of context, the Construction Contractors Board is projected to start the 17-19 biennium with about $9.2 million in beginning fund balance, which, if you translate that into expenditures, that's about 14 months worth of expenditures. So that sort of accumulated as a result of revenues exceeding projections and basically the recovery in housing market in Oregon, combined with expenditures coming in lower than budget. So I'm going to move through presentation here. So basically what we were looking to do was to walk down over time the balance that the Construction Contractors Board had available, because ultimately the fee payers should be paying for the cost of the service provided, more or less. So what we did to achieve that was the Construction Contractors Board proposed a reduction in fees of $1.2 million for their continuing education services. The director, Jim Denno, has done a lot of work along with the board itself to reach out to contractors and see sort of where the pain points were in the process and how to streamline that. And this was a proposal they brought forward to essentially reduce the money coming into the agency. And I want to bring this up so that Jim can take credit for it. It was not my idea. But this was one of the big ways that we're bringing down the ending balance for the agency. Another thing that we're doing and proposing in the governor's budget is $1.2 million in reductions to both services and supplies and to personal services. And again, the reason for this is that the agency has been operating more efficiently, hasn't really used a lot of the limitation, their budget in the most recent biennium. And so we want to sort of try to true that up and use the budget as a tool for planning ongoing need. In addition to the lowering the fees, I just also wanted to highlight the governor's budget does include it's about $700,000 in fine revenues that goes to the general fund that the agency contributes. So the net result of these actions and the addition of the IT project manager position was an ending balance of about $18.5 million for the agency, which translates into approximately 13 months of expenditures. There's also about $15.4 million in approved expenditure limitation for 2017-18. Other than those changes... Really, the other changes that were proposed in the governor's budget were just updates to the DAS price list and state government service charges that have been sort of standard throughout all state agencies. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions from the committee.
Mr. Chair, again, I apologize for having overlapping meetings, but I just want to pile on to the bouquet toss from Mr. Deno. I think that he has resurrected this agency, and I want to acknowledge my appreciation on the record.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Okay. If not, thank you so much. I want to ask if there is anyone else out there that would like to provide any kind of a testimony regarding Senate Bill 5511. Well, answered my question right there. Didn't no one signed up? Well, with that, if there's no other questions or anything like that, thank you very much. Great presentations. Always good to have a good news story sometimes during the week and stuff, so really appreciate it. If everybody is all good, then I guess that we will adjourn and reconvene tomorrow at $1,500. That's 3 o'clock for you civilians, and we are adjourned. Civilians, and we are adjourned. 3 o'clock for you civilians.